Okay, good evening, gentlemen. We continue in the Rambam, Perek Vav, Hilchas Gezela Vaveda, Halacha Zayin, in the Maznaim text. We're on page 290 and 291. We have finished the topics regarding in Yonim of lost objects or misplaced objects or exchanged objects, and we get back to good old-fashioned theft. However, we're going to take a different dimension of it. And what basically we're going to discuss from now till the end of the parak, and with God's help, hopefully we can finish to the end of the parak today. And even without God's help, we'll stay till we finish the end of the parak.
So we need God's help to finish in time. Okay.
We'll discuss things that are not really biblically prohibited in terms of theft, but the rabbis said these are things that we consider to be theft for reasons of darkei shalom, of making peace amongst Jews, even though it's not technically actual theft. So that's what Halacha Zayin is going to begin with. Dvarim harbe yasru chachamim mishum gozel. There's many things that the rabbis prohibited, and they put it under the rubric of thievery, even though there's not actual thievery going down. You'll see, we're not exactly taking money by force, which is normal gezel. So it's not actual gezel, but we'll see what that means. And anyone transgresses it, he's a robber by rabbinic decree. They're going to give us two examples, and then for the next number of halachas, we'll elaborate on these two examples. People who are mafricha yonim, the way the Rambam is going to learn it, it's who set their doves in flight.
Wow.
And masachim bekubia is basically people who are playing cards or
gamblers.
Dice.
So there was a thing.
Dice players.
Butterflies are free, but I've never heard doves are free.
So we will see. So the next couple halachas are going to be in the dove sending, and then we'll come back to the gamblers in halacha yud. So mafrika yonim kesed. So explain to us what is the issue by setting doves in flight. So the answer is now what generally happens, and this will be explained as we go ahead. You have birds that you could have under your own lock and keep.
Yeah.
And those are your birds.
And a dove.
But then we have what is called a dove coat, I believe they call it.
A dove coat. It's like a dove coop.
And what is you've got a birdhouse, something like that. It's a little more advanced than
it's like a chicken house.
Sophisticated
like
that.
Yeah.
And it's up on a pole, up in the air. And these doves, you know, can come into your domain, and they go into your dove coat, and they kind of hang around there. And they make it their domicile on your property. Biblically, that bird is not yours because you never made a kinyan with it, but it kind of hangs around your property. And if it will do things that could cause damage to somebody else, we would call that rabbinically a problem. In other words, it is not actually your birds. It's not your doves. Our rabbis consider it your property insofar to keep peaceful relations amongst your neighbors and fellow Jews, as we will see. But that's the idea over here. We're not talking about if we have your own cow and it's yours. You know, we learned Hilchos Niske Mammon. It's yours. You bought it. You made a kinyan on it. And it does things. These birds, you never really make a formal kinyan on them. And if they cause certain damages, you'll be rabbinically obliged for it. And that's what we're going to talk about now. So now, Lo yafriach adam besoch hayishuv. A person should not set to flight one of these doves in a residential area, an area where people are living. As we will see, what will happen? Sherei lo keach mamon achem shlo kedin, because it could come out that this dove will cause you to take money from someone else, not according to law. Why? Mm-hmm. For example, shemishaleach zocher. Let's say you send out a male dove,
and
he's going to go somewhere. The Yavina gave him Mishova Chacher, and he's going to bring a female. He'll entice a female bird to come from a different dove coat, or the reverse. On a cave, you're going to send in a cave a female bird. The Savi Zohar is going to bring a Zohar, a male bird, and that is going to create problems because although technically it's not your bird, and technically you haven't stolen, but since you know it pretty much is on your account, because your neighbor will consider it to be your bird to the extent that he went and stole his bird. So therefore, in terms of darchei shalom, in other words, there's no real geneva going on. but we don't want the Hatfields and McCoys to start springing up over here.
Oh boy.
So therefore, we say you have to be careful and don't let that bird, you don't send that bird out, and then it may find other birds. And the Rambam continues, Lo Yonim Bavlad, it's not only doves, Elakolo Esa Kasebi Shar Oifes Ochaya Behema. If you any other kinds of birds or wild animals or domesticated animals. And on that last word, the Mephoshim had a little bit of a problem with that, because a domesticated animal would should be considered yours according to biblical law, because usually you acquire it in a lawful manner with a proper kinyan. So there's a problem with that other word. But either way, be that as may hareza gazm yivrayim, you'd be a rabbinic thief. Okay. Similar halachas, ches. The rabbis also prohibited us to trap doves in an inhabited area, because those are doves that belong to other people, even though they're only belong to other people on a rabbinic level.
Right.
They're not really theirs. Those other people, they didn't make a kinyan on it. But you're going to capture them, and that would make the person who feels he has a dove be very upset at you. We don't set nets out to catch these doves. Unless you are 4 kilometers away from the inhabited area. In other words, you can catch a dove that's hefker. There's no problem there. But if you're setting out a net and within 4 kilometers is a neighbor, well, guess what? There's a good chance that your neighbor's dove is going to get caught in your net. And that would be rabbinic thievery. Now, if the inhabited area was one of vineyards, then the distance even extended. Even 100 meals, you can't set traps. Why? Because we can assume that the doves of people with, vineyards, there's a much more extended reach of where they travel, and there you have to be careful beyond that. And you shouldn't also set nets or traps inside dove cotes as well. Meaning to say, let's say, even if it's your dove coat. In other words, you have a dove coat, and you're putting a trap in the dove coat. Now what's going to happen is a good likelihood that foreign birds will come into your dove coat, and you will catch them. Right? That's like a trap for them, even though it's in your property, but it's going to be birds coming from somewhere else. So even if it's yours, you can't do that. Or even if it's, let's say you go to a non-Jewish person's dove coat, right? So, and we know there's no problem of stealing from a ganef in this situation at all, because according to the Torah, they're hefker, and only by a Jew would we make a gzeir, but not by a goy. But we're afraid other people's birds could come in there as well. Oh, shall hefker, or even it's a dove coat of hefker. You can't spread that net, why, that trap. Because why? Because we assume that other birds are going to come in. If you're 100 meals away from a populated area, why? Because we have a concept, that doves from an inhabited area, both the Yishuv Shovim, they will come to these dove cotes. In other words, wherever there's a concentration of doves in one place, even doves from a very great distance will enter. And you could have a dove coat in general in your place. That's okay. You have a dove coat, and another dove comes in. That's not a problem. I haven't captured him for my own. But putting a trap in there, then you'll be catching somebody else's dove. Halacha test. Next page. Marchikim es hashovech minoir chamishi mama. A person, when you're constructing a dove coat, you have to put it at least 50 amas away from the village. Why? Because, and the birds who come to your dove coat will not only eat the seeds that you have in your dove coat, they're going to eat the seeds of other people. So you're bringing birds from all around. They're coming to your dove coat, and guess what? They're going to feast on other people's properties. We know that doves can go more than 50 amas anyway, but if it's in your property, they're going to eat your grass on your 50 amas, and they're going to get full before they go beyond and into other people's properties. And similarly, so it's got to be 50 away from the city. You can't even put a dove coat in your own property. Unless there's 50 amas in every direction within your property before the next piece of property. Why? The same idea. Because you don't want those birds to draw forth into other areas beyond your field, and they'll cause damage to other fields by eating other people's food. Now, what if you buy a dove coat from somebody? and that person's dove coat is within 50 tefachim of other people. If you buy a dove coat from somebody else, even though the distance between the newly acquired dove coat in his field and the area of his friend's field is only a base rova, and a base rova is a little bit more than 10 amas bilvad, which is a much smaller area, still areu becheskaso, we leave it with the arrangement that it was beforehand, and we assume that things were okay beforehand. In other words, what was this guy doing with the dove coat in the middle of the thing? Must be there were certain arrangements made with the neighbors that allowed him to do that if it's been up for a while. If it wasn't allowed, they probably would have made him take it down by now.
Right.
The fact that he's selling it, it's not like a secret deal and behind closed doors. In other words, it's a common knowledge sale. So there must be there were other arrangements that permitted this. And therefore, Ve'mechayvino Salahachi would not require him to distance it after buying it. Moreover, says the Shulchan Aruch, that if, let's say, the dove coat you buy falls, you can rebuild it in its place, even though it's still within 50
hours. The precedence has been set.
That's right. Okay, we've taken care of dove coats and doves. We move on to gambling. Halacha Yud. Hamasacha Gim Bekuvya. What do we mean, gambling? Kate said, what does that mean? Elish Hamasacha Gim Be'etzim of Etzorus or Batzomus of Ketzim. People play with sticks, or they play with rocks, or with bones, or similar things. Vosin snipe and they make a condition between them, and they say, whatever they flip a coin, flip a rock, however they, whatever they do, you know. Whoever beats the other guy in this game gets such and such amount of money. Anybody who plays these types of games, this is rabbinic thievery. Even though the guy who's giving away the money, he's doing it willingly. They bet whatever they bet in the gambling. And the guy put the money on the table. And he knows it's at risk. And he's willing to be a good loser. But still, what's the realities? The truth is, the other guy took your money for nothing. What do you mean for nothing? He said, I didn't get anything for it. I didn't get, usually you give money away and you get something for what you give. But he didn't get anything. And it was, derech schok v'hito, was in a joking way and a meaningless way. Mean to say that, the guy really didn't give it with a full heart, didn't really want to give it to the other fellow. He was much more inclined to wanting to win, right? In other words, the fact that the loser consents, you know, it's not something he really is wholeheartedly doing, because no one bets if they think they're going to lose. The guy thinks he's going to win. Of course, he gives in at the end, but he's not exactly that thrilled about it. Therefore, that giving isn't really a wholehearted giving, and therefore, the fact you're taking it, it would be rabbinically considered like thievery. And therefore, Areza goes, we'll consider that stealing, even though you didn't steal it from him per se.
Yeah.
But the guy never really is maskim agreeable that you should take it. Or people who have games with domesticated animals, wild animals, or birds, let's say dog races.
Race horses.
Both in tonight and make conditions. Which other one, you know, or the dog fights, you know, Michael Vick. The player got suspended from the NFL for having those games. He's in jail for that.
Yeah.
Right? Whoever beats up the other animal or runs fast than the others. Anything similar to that? Hakol osur, you can't do it. It's rabbinic thievery. So you can't do it. You're considered like a ganav. Yes, sir.
I notice all these refer to other things like dice or other animals or whatever. What about between you and another person? Like, I can beat you in a race.
Same thing. All these things, it's the same thing. It's a bet. It's one form of a bet or another.
But those are all referring to something that you have no control over.
Doesn't matter. And if you have control, it's the same. The main idea is I don't plan on losing, and I don't want to give you money for nothing.
So what about betting on sports? Is that
betting on sports should be the same thing. Yeah. And it is betting should be the same thing.
There you go.
Same, you know, because
that wager off.
It's not a problem if you bet and lose. It's a problem if you bet and win. Betting and winning is the problem. Although we'll learn in the next halacha, even betting and losing is going to be a problem in a minute.
So this far, is not, there we go. Betting words, and losing
you
is
you are taking money that is not that's really tough. Yours. The other guy is not really happy to give you the money.
So lottery ticket.
A lottery ticket is different because it's not from any person per se. It's the government is doing it. In other words, the government is saying, listen, we want you to buy lottery tickets. You guys are going to put in $50 million of tickets. We're only going to pay out $10 million in cash. You're assisting the government in getting $40 million. Right. I'm not betting against a person. I'm going into the government over here, right? Is that
slot machine?
What? Well, the guy...
Well, a slot machine.
You're causing the other guy to steal from you.
Well,
you're causing the other guy to steal from you.
Why is it different than a lottery ticket?
Because first of all, the government, whatever the government uses,
the lotteries.
The difference is what the government gets. Ultimately, you're going to benefit from.
No, casinos are also government run.
But they're not totally. The guys get their cut. Whatever the government gets at the end of the day, you benefit. They make $40 million profit. It goes to the schools. It goes to the roads. It goes to whatever. So it's really going back. It's not going into the government official's pocket, we hope, right? But it really is. It's a way of paying another tax for yourself. What is the government doing with all the money, right? They're using it. It's going back into the economy. It's going back to help you. It goes to turn the lights on. It pays the bills in your government. So it's a subtle form of tax. With a voluntary tax by the fact that you may win something. So even though if you bet against somebody, he's taking the other guy, he's saying you're not seeing any benefit from it. Here you are really seeing indirect benefits from it, and that's why that's not a problem.
No, but the governments run the lottery agency, they run the casino agency.
But they don't get that same kind of cut.
I think they do.
I don't, we'll have to be my eye in this. We'll have to be my eye in this.
You're not allowed to walk into a casino, basically.
Well, you shouldn't walk into a casino anyway, because it's not a very healthy spiritual environment to be in. Although, people pray there a lot. But it's not the kind of
praying. There's a lot of praying.
Right? But really, you shouldn't be doing these things, right? Anything things is casually praying. All right, that's already business.
That's business.
You're buying real commodities. Well, yeah. There's a difference. When I buy a stock, I own part of the company. And I'm not losing money. You own a part of the company. The company is worth X amount, that's what I bought. It's just so you buy commodities. You're buying commodities, that's what it's worth. Now it may go up and down, but that's not a gamble. When I buy a stock, I'm getting something in return for it. It's a real piece of stock. I have ownership of the company. I've given money and I've gotten something in return.
But there's all these futures, there's things that you're not even
owning. Doesn't matter. Yeah. You do own certain amount of oil, certain amount of grain, you own it. Now it may be worth less later, but you still own it. That's not a problem. Here, when we're talking about bets, you are getting nothing in return for what you are giving. And that is a problem. That is a problem. Now, however, let's go further in Yudav. What if you play gambling with a non-Jew and you're taking money from the non-Jew? Ain bo iser gozel.
There's the out right there.
Because the goy was allowing you to have it, and the rabbis won't rabbinically say it's wrong for a goy. Right? Only by a Jew will they say it, but not for a goy. However, there was a different prohibition of wasting your time.
Instead of studying Torah.
Wait. It's fitting for a person only to be involved in either, in all his life, to be involved in either learning Torah or in settling the world. In other words, do a job that helps people. Make shoes. And it helps people to have shoes. You got a productive kind of a job. So even if we're going to say, listen, all I do is take bets from goyim. I run a gambling casino. I take bets from goyim all day long. That's not a productive thing. Gambling does not make the world a better place. So to this idea, let's take it a step further. What if you guys just playing cards? You're not betting on anything.
It's Bittles money.
Yeah, you're playing for chips. And it's not really money. Bittles money. Right? So it's also a waste of time.
So dreidling on Hanukkah.
Trailing is a minig already. That's a minig, yes. Kadmonim, and we only do it on Hanukkah.
Yeah, that's right.
We're not betting high stakes over here.
No.
And there is Chocolate a Jewish pizza. Concept, Neis Gadol HaYosham. That's something we only do on Hanukkah, only as a minig.
Yeah.
So, and that's already something that
that's usually familiar. Interacting with your kids. So it's family.
Okay, Yerbeis. Rolling along. Mitsuda, okay. Yud beis mitzudos chayev aofos v'dogim shenaflu minei chay letocha mitzuda. Let's say a person sets traps out into the field to catch a wild animal, a bird or a fish, whatever, and different types of these animals fall into the traps. So you set a trap, and an animal got in, and you trapped it. Now, comes along another fellow, Ubach, another guy comes along, sees your this rabbit in your trap, Unatol, and he takes it out of the trap. So now, really, have you acquired ownership when your trap caught that rabbit?
Not
really.
No.
Well
supposedly, yes.
This is rabbinic thievery. In other words, it's really not. We'll see why. You really don't have a kinyan in it. You didn't make a kinyan in it. And therefore, it's not really yours. But if people will take things out of your trap, it will cause a lot of animosity. So you're not allowed to do this. So what is going to... Why? He says, because even though they're trapped, it never yet entered the possession of the person who acquired them.
It's not official.
In order for an owner to acquire, for you to be the owner of an animal that you've trapped, there has to be a formal kinyan. Now, how are you going to make a kinyan when trying to catch wild animals? So it only happens when the traps have receptacles, which you make like a little box. And now some of the trap makes it, the box closes in on him. And once you have the receptacle, and the animal now is in the receptacle, so that becomes your chutzer, so to speak, your domicile, and you're coining it with chutzer. So if you have that kind of a trap and guy steals it, that would be stealing d'oraisa, because you made it a kinyan. But a trap that just catches him, but he's out in the open, so to speak, you really didn't make a kinyan, and therefore there really is no biblical stealing. But the rabbis say the guy shouldn't do it because it would cause animosity between people.
So what you should do is you should not have a chatzir, because if somebody takes it, you can cause them to do a love araisa. If you don't have a chatzir, then he's only just doing a love rabbana.
Well, the guy has to not steal.
100%.
First of all, it's not right.
What's his lif ne'iver that you're...
It's not lif ne'iver. The guy's not supposed to be a bum.
Right.
You don't have to worry about people being bums. You want to catch things you're entitled to. Your demo. Nohar ha-moyshech. The Hamayonos Hanovim. Let's say a person has a stream or a little brook or whatever that travels through his property.
Larry Garber.
Now, and other people take use of that. Harehain shall call autumn. They belong to everybody. They're not considered the private property of the person on whose land they lie. Anybody may draw water from it. Now, we're not talking where the guy dug a little... man-made lake in his property and put water in it. We're talking about something that's passing through his place. Right? There's a river and it goes past your place and everyone's entitled to that water and there's no concept of gezel over there.
The water, once it leaves your property or while it's still on your property?
Even on your property. There's no problems of gezel over there because it came from before. I don't know about fishing. Now, Oni Hamenakev Barosh HaZayis. Let's say a poor man climbs on top of an olive tree and he's collecting the olives that were left over of shichcha. We know if an owner is collecting his fruits and vegetables, if he forgets something, it belongs to the poor people. So a poor guy comes along, he sees a couple olives on the top, he climbs up. Now how's he going to get it? So what does he do? He goes there and what he does is he gets on the top and he hits it or whatever, and the thing goes to the bottom.
Right.
However, he causes it to go to the ground. Now, the guy's on the top. Comes an unscrupulous second oni. Another guy just comes and scoops it right off the ground while the guy's on top.
That's not nice.
Now, when the guy just climbs to the top and he beats the branches, all he did was beat the branches. He never made a kinyan in it. So this guy technically... The second guy, he says, take it. We say, I raise the gozel in the frame. We say that's rabbinic thievery.
Shalom.
Because obviously it's not going to make good relations.
No,
but on the other hand, what if the oni on the top, he takes off and puts it in his hand. And then he throws it down, raises the gozel over. That's complete thievery. Because it came to the one who did acquire them, because he did make a proper kinyan by biblical law.
Is there no Jewish concept of trespass? There's no...
No, a name or a lot of gold.
No, I mean in general, like we talked to...
Well, if someone's trespassing, you can't go in there to begin with.
You can't go in Rishusa, yeah?
Okay, you doubt. Hadavarim, bees. Ain't a Rishuso. On a biblical level, you never really considered owner of your bees. Ain't a Rishusha Shalotim, Kamotarnagolim, Vavazim. They're not like roosters and ducks. The bees are considered, you know, really on a biblical level, they're not yours, but rabbinically we say those bees are yours. We do give a rabbinic kinyan in them. And therefore, if somebody steals a swarm of bees, or he keeps the owner back away from getting them when they go into his rishus. In other words, it goes to another guy's rishus. The owner wants to go into the guy's, says, my bees are in your property. Can I go in there? No, I'm not letting you in. That would be rabbinic thievery. Therefore, let's say his swarm of bees has left his property, has gone to his friend's property. The owner of the swarm of bees is allowed to go into the other guy's field and take his swarm of bees. Even, and that's not considered trespassing, because it's like your aveda. It's kind of going to the guy's property. But what if you damage something in your friend's property? You stepped on something and broke it? You have to pay what you broke. But let's say a whole bunch of bees go into the other guy's property and they go on a branch. They're all on a branch. Now what's the easiest way to collect the whole swarm of bees? Cut the branch and take the branch with you. But you can't cut off the branch with the saying, I'll cut off the branch and I'll pay the guy for the branch. And we're talking about a branch that usually won't grow back. So you're damaging his property forever. Don't you let you lechatchila damage a guy's property, even with the intention of paying back money for that, and you have to find a different way to collect the bees. Now let's say...
Mind you, which what the Torah says, according to Rabbi Ben Asher, that that's permitted.
Okay, it's different opinions.
Okay,
now the next case has to be understood as following. Let's say a swarm of bees leaves a guy's property. He pursues them. He finds them on another guy's property. And the other guy claims, and he says, can I go into your property? I want to get my bees. The guy says, not your bees, they're my bees.
Who's going to accept for testimony?
So now, we need witnesses. So what kind of people will be good as witnesses? We'll see that people who are normally not good for testimony will be good over here. Because remember, the ownership here is only rabbinic.
Right.
So therefore, an emenas isho katan lomer, a woman or a child is believed to say, mikan yotz nechil zeh, that the swarm left from that guy's property. And it's that guy's swarm. However, it can't be in overt testimony. It can't be, we ask them, can you tell us where these bees came from? Because then it's more like a testimony. But rather we say, it should be as we call casual speaking. In other words, they weren't even concentrating so much on what they were saying. They were just saying what was like off the top of their heads. Let's say the owner's running after the swarms. And they say, where are they? And he says, well, you know, they came from over here and they're over here. That's just, you know, it's casual. Right, and then we will believe a casual type of statement. Next page, even though normally a woman or a cotton are not eligible for testimony, but hold the kinyan devar midivrei, since the kinyan in the bees is only rabbinic, hemino sombo, their testimony is accepted. In other words, you're not really going to be involved in any biblical types of cases over here, so you're not really giving major testimony because it never belonged to him. And it's really not going to belong to anybody at the end of the day, so that's okay. Now, we know there's a concept, we will learn more about it next week. When we talk about if a person steals something and denies and lies and swears, then we find he's a liar, not only does he have to pay back what he stole, he has to pay back an extra tenth, and he has to bring a korban.
A tenth or a fifth?
What did I say? A chomesh. I'm sorry, a fifth. Thank you. A fifth and a korban. So now, what about a case of rabbinic thievery? You know, the guy took a rabbit out of the trap.
Oh,
and the guy says, you took my rabbit? No, I swear I didn't take your rabbit. And then they find he's a liar. So now what do we do? So Halacha Tesayin says the following. Anyone who has within his possession rabbinic thievery, it can't be expropriated by judges. In other words, sometimes, the bezin has a power to take money away from people. They don't have the power to take it away in these situations here. Vechenim kafar nishman. Let's say the same thing. If he swore, denied and swore, and we find he's a liar, ein mosif chomish kamosha mosif gazel gomer. We don't make him pay another fifth like we do a normal gezel. So all these extra rules that apply in normal cases of gezel d'oraisa do not apply in gezel d'rabbanan. And therefore, it'll come out, it's going to be very hard to collect from these kinds of people. We could say you're a goslin. We could say rabbinically you're a goslin. But if the guy says, I ain't paying, it's going to be hard to get a hold of it. So, and if he's lying, you're not going to get any money out of that as well. So, because the truth of the matter is, it's not biblical thievery. The rabbis have said you shouldn't do it. It's more of a lechatchila than a b'di'evit inyan. Yeah. The rabbis said, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Why? Because really it's going to cause lots of problems. But if you are going to cause problems, there's not much of the best in its recourse to stop the problems from stopping them, because they don't have the ability to collect the money back, because technically they can't take something that's not biblically wrong, that it shouldn't be in that guy's permission. So therefore, in those cases, they do not apply. We did exactly in a half an hour.
So is this the kind of thing where the original owner can go and grab it himself?
That would be,
you didn't say that.
No. Well, let's put it this way.
This is not a doubt.
It will be, you know, I think probably he couldn't, because then the other guy will say he took my thing.
I'm thinking back to the original.
The guy takes the rabbit. The guy takes the rabbit. Right? The guy takes the rabbit. Now the original guy comes back and says, what are you talking about? I took the rabbit. I made a kinyan in it. Let's say the rabbit. It gets caught in the trap. Biblically, it does not belong to the guy with the trap. Another guy comes along and takes it. Now who owns it biblically? The second guy.
Yeah.
Now the other guy goes and takes from him. Bezdin would then be allowed to take it away from the guy from the trap.
Yeah,
and making it back to the other guy.